Good afternoon. This is the story of Amos Story and his son Solomon, just turned 13 when our story begins in 1774, 1 year before the American Revolution broke out. The Story family consisted of Amos, his wife Anne, and their 5 children, Solomon being the oldest. They lived in Salisbury, Connecticut, and like many other Yankee families, they were much disturbed over conditions between the American colonies and Great Britain across the sea. "Why, I couldn't buy any notepaper today," Amos fumed, "unless I put a government stamp onto it. They've taxed our tea. They'll be taxing tobacco next. I've a good mind to clear out of Connecticut and go up into the woods." "What woods?" asked his wife. "Why, I thought I might go up to that place the Rollins boys were talking about, up between New York and Canada. The French call it Verdmont, for green mountains. They say the soil is red and rich, and there's big groves of oak and maple trees, and what's more, the brooks are chock-a-block full of big fat trout." "What about the Indians?" his wife asked. "Why, Jim Rollins says they'll behave if those blame Britishers don't stir them up with rum and gunpowder. You know, wife, we can get land up there in Verdmont by just making our pitch. Jim says there's a wonderful place up near a stream called Otter Creek." And so a few days later, it was all settled. Amos would go ahead and build a cabin and come back for the family later. When he had packed some salt and some seeds for a garden, his tools and blankets and food, he picked up his musket. And there stood Solomon waiting with his gun and fishing tackle. "I'm going with you, Father. I can help lug logs and fetch stones. And don't forget, I can hunt and fish and cook. And 2 men on a job are always better than 1. The boy smiled so wistfully, his mother said, "Take him, Amos. But promise you'll come back and tell us how things are going." As she kissed him goodbye, Amos said, "By this time next summer, we'll be back here after the rest of you." And father and son started off on their great adventure in the wilderness. They would have made much better time had they taken a canoe up the Connecticut River. Instead, they followed the blazed trails, then entered the thick, dark woods, traveling over narrow Indian pathways. At times, they waded waist-deep in swampy bogs. They had no charts, no maps, no compass, Amos relying on his knowledge of the woods and the stars to guide him. "The stories arrived," says historian John Weeks, "in October 1774. And after looking around, Amos chose a spot for his cabin on a hill above Otter Creek and went to work. While he felled the trees, Solomon lugged stones and helped in many ways. And by the time snow fell, the cabin was up and roofed over. All that long, dark winter, father and son worked together, making furniture, putting up shelves, building bunks and bins to hold the vegetables. Nights as they lay in front of the fire, while the snow swirled outside and the wolves howled, they talked about Woods Law, war, and the growing tension between the colonists and England. Amos Story was a real patriot, and he instilled into his son Solomon his love for freedom, telling him how his people had come to America to escape persecution and how they thought they were going to have free speech and be able to work, live, and worship the way they wanted to. He told him about the Stamp Act and what it meant and about the famous Boston Tea Party. And Amos added grimly, "Always remember, son, might never makes right. If we don't stand up and fight for our freedoms, we don't deserve them." All this seemed very far away to 13-year-old Solomon Story, but it was brought home to him sooner than he expected. In the spring of 1775, Amos finished the mantle for the fireplace and said proudly, "There, I guess that'll tickle your mother and the girls. Now, son, we get to clear a place for a garden." It was tough work, snaking out roots and burning stumps and clearing the field of stones, but they managed and planted their few precious vegetables. "When the leaves on the oak tree are as big as a mouse's ear, we can start sowing the grain. And then, my boy, it'll be time to go back to Connecticut and fetch the family." Solomon had transplanted some wild violets and columbine and ferns he'd fetched from the woods. And he thought how pleased his mother would be to see the great mass of cardinal flower, blue flags, and pond lilies he'd found on the banks of the creek while fishing for pickerel. They were all ready to start for Salisbury, Connecticut, when Amos said thoughtfully, "I hate to do it, son, but that big maple tree's got to come down. It throws so much shade on the garden, nothing will grow. But don't ever tell your mother how beautiful it was last October." And grabbing his axe, he went out. Solomon, who couldn't bear to cut down any tree, took a couple of buckets and went after blueberries for their last meal before starting for home. As Amos Story swung his axe, chips flew in all directions. and sweat poured down his thin and bearded face. It stung his eyes, but he kept on chopping, unmindful that a breeze was stirring the tops of the trees. And just as he started to step out of the way, a gust of wind struck the big maple, and it crashed, knocking Amos Story to the ground. Turning, he raised his arm to ward off the blow, but it was a futile and fatal gesture. The big limb had crushed his chest. Solomon returned an hour later, and seeing the tree was down, called to his father. "I've got some wonderful berries and a pail of water. Don't you want a nice cool drink?" But only a chipmunk answered as he scampered, chattering among the leafy branches. Puzzled but not alarmed, Solomon pushed his way through the bright green leaves, and his heart almost stopped at the sight before him. "Father," he cried, "oh, are you hurt awful bad? Speak to me, father." But Amos Story's lips were sealed in death, and one long look convinced Solomon he could never free his father's body without help. The nearest cabin was 10 miles away, and night was coming on. But the broken-hearted boy started on the run, and he kept running as long as the trail would permit. Often he stumbled on vines and roots, and his bare brown legs were scratched by brambles. But finally he saw the welcome light of Benjamin Smalley's cabin, and with his last ounce of strength, he banged upon the door. "My father's been killed," he stammered. "Will you please come and help me do what has to be done?" While the men were getting ready, Mrs. Smalley made Solomon drink some hot milk, and she put up a snack of bread and meat and some fresh-made corn cake. Then with ropes, lanterns, block, and tackle, they started back, arriving at the Story cabin as the eastern sky turned gray. While the neighbors labored with saws and ropes, Solomon took his father's shovel and dug a deep pit in the soft red soil of Vermont. And just as the sun came over the hill, Amos Story was placed in a blanket and without a word, lowered into his grave. Earth was shoveled in gently, then some brush and rocks put on to keep away the wild animals. Then Mr. Smalley fashioned a cross from two sticks and set it up at the head of the grave, saying, "Now that your pa is dead, you can come live with us, Solomon." But the boy shook his head. "I'll thank you for a bit of that corn cake, sir. Then I must be starting for Connecticut." Benjamin Smalley wouldn't hear of such a thing. "You'll never make it, boy. Why, it's 150 miles as the crow flies, and twice as far on foot. But I've got to go. I promised my mother." And Solomon dashed for the cabin, coming out a few minutes later with the guns, powder, and what there was left of the salt. "Will you take care of these while I'm gone?" he asked. And before they could answer, he had dashed down the trail and disappeared. I have often wondered what that youngster thought about as he made his way through that wild, dark forest, running like a rabbit when he could, slashing through vines and tangled underbrush, swimming the deep, cold streams, and trying to sleep in the shelter of an uprooted tree or in some rocky cave. All he had for food was the bit of corn cake, and that crumbled so he had to eat it all at once, leaving only such wild fruits and berries as he could pick along the way. If he'd had flint and steel, he could have made a fire and roasted a rabbit or broiled a trout. But Solomon Story had no means of making fire, nor did he want to stop to catch fish and kill game. He just kept on going, doing very well to remember certain trees and rocks he'd seen only once before. One night, he almost ran headlong into a camp of Indians and ducked out of sight in the nick of time. They were ugly and dirty, and they had white men's scalps hanging from a pole above their campfire. The first 2 weeks, Solomon kept a count of the days by notching a stick. Then he lost it, so he didn't know how long he'd been on the way. And by now, he was so fatigued, he didn't much care. Late one afternoon, a terrific thunderstorm swept through the ravine, so he took shelter in a large cave. As the lightning flashed and thunder boomed, trees fell, blocking the entrance, and muddy water poured in and rose knee-deep. So that night, Solomon hardly slept at all, crouched as he was on a narrow, rocky shelf, waiting for the storm to subside. In the far corner of the cave, he could see animals' eyes moving in the darkness, probably panthers or maybe wolves. Anyway, it was a thankful boy who climbed out of that cave the next morning to resume his journey. Over and over, he thanked his lucky stars that his father had taught him woods lore. And he recalled with a tug at his heart the long talks they'd had about courage and patriotism and how it was everybody's business to stand up and fight for freedom. He remembered his father saying, "There may be bloodshed, son, before all this is straightened out. And I want you to promise, if anything happens to me, you'll take my place, whether it's protecting your mother and brothers and sisters at home or in the firing line." And Solomon had promised. "Now I'm almost 15, he thought, "and I'm old enough for responsibilities. so he tightened the cord around his waist and pushed grimly on, figuring that in another week he should come to some sign of civilization. The long trek and lack of food, however, took their toll, and one morning Solomon awakened too weak to go farther. His head throbbed and his tummy ached, so he crawled to the bank of a brook and drank deep. Then he picked some leaves and chewed them, and later he was awful sick. He never did know how long he slept under his blanket of leaves, but the fever passed, leaving him so shaky he could barely stand. Gritting his teeth, he forced himself down the rocky side of a hill and emerged from the woods to find the blazed trail, which eventually led him to the first real road he had trod in a year. Only his mother could have recognized the worn and weary youngster in torn and mud-spattered clothes who staggered into her yard on that August afternoon. And one look at his face told her something terrible had happened. "You can tell me later, Solomon," she said, slipping her strong arms around him and practically dragging him into the house. She gave him hot soup, a bit of brandy, bathed his badly bitten and sunburned face, and then laid him tenderly on the bed. And as she sat there beside her oldest boy, Anne's story in her heart, knew that her husband, Amos, was dead. Solomon slept for 2 whole days and nights, then sobbed out the details of how his father had been killed. His mother kept a stiff upper lip, saying, "It was God's will, and we must carry on as he would want us to." Already, Anne's story had disposed of most of her household things, and she surprised Solomon by saying, "As soon as you are able, you will take us back to the cabin in Vermont." As his father had predicted, open warfare had broken out between the Redcoats and Yankee farmers, with bloodshed at Concord Bridge and many Americans killed at Bunker Hill. But, Anne Story said with a touch of pride, "Ethan Allen took Ticonderoga, and he's right here in Salisbury now, building a forge to make guns and cannon. He said he'd heard of our place at Otter Creek, and he's going to send his Green Mountain boys to pay us a visit. You will like Ethan Allen. He's so big and brave and loyal." What that remarkable woman Anne Story did for her family, state, and nation has been told and written many, many times. I thought it was about time to tell of Solomon's story, the 15-year-old boy who today is almost forgotten. This, then, has been the story of that lad and his father, Amos Story. But it is only the prelude, shall we say, to the more thrilling episodes of Solomon Story's life, when he and his mother played important roles in the American Revolution. If you like true historical tales about New England, listen next week, for I shall have a Yankee yarn about Indians on the warpath, spies, underground tunnels, British Redcoats, and Ethan Allen's Green Mountain Boys, aided and abetted by Anne Story, the American mother and patriot who risked her life many, many times because she firmly believed that freedom is everybody's business.